The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, this is Frank Dimino at Old Habits Die Hard, and you're listening to Talking Metal.
This is Justin German from Cruel Season and Autumn Hour, and you're listening to Talking Metal.
Molson Canadian presents Heavy Montreal. August 7th, 8th, and 9th, outdoors at Parc Jean Drapeau, featuring Slipknot, Faith No More, Korn, and Mastodon. 3 full days of rock and metal with Lamb of God, Iggy Pop, Fozzy, Lita Ford, and many more. Festival passes on sale now. For the full festival lineup, visit HeavyMontreal.com, presented by Evenco.
Hey guys, welcome to Talking Metal. Let's get right into some music. This is by one of today's two guests, Frank Dimino. He's got a great new record out. We're going to hear all about it from him during the interview. And this song is called Rockin' in the City.
Take 4!
Hey guys, welcome to another edition of the Talking Metal Podcast. My name is Mark Striegel, and I will be flying up in less than 4 weeks to attend Heavy Montreal, a three-day heavy metal, hard rock, punk rock, just loud rock festival going on at Parc Jean Drapeau in Montreal, Canada. I will be there. If you're going to be there, please let me know. We got to hang. I'll be hanging with some of my my podcasting friends, Mitch Joel and Mitch LaFon, who I do the Metal Raps podcast with. If you haven't checked out my other podcast, Metal Raps, check it out on iTunes and Spreaker, too. So it's going to be great, and I'll be doing some Talking Metal episodes backstage, and it's just going to be a three-day-long hang. I cannot wait. Going to see Iggy Pop. Love Iggy Pop. Going to see Fozzy with Rich Ward and Chris Jericho. Love those guys. Going to see Lita Ford, one of my teenage crushes, and just somebody, regardless of being a woman, who's just rocked me so hard. And who else? Pentagram is scheduled to play. Hopefully Bobby can get some visa issues sorted out and make that happen. We have also the great Lamb of God. Of course, Slipknot, and I am so psyched personally to see Faith No More headline Saturday night. On today's episode of Talking Metal, two great guests. One that is a little more known. His name is Frank Demino, and he played in the great band I just have loved for decades and decades, Angel. I didn't get into them until the 80s, but they were a band more from the 70s era into the 80s. And also appearing on today's show, in addition to Frank, legendary classic rocker Frank Demino, is Justin German. And he played in a highly underrated band called Autumn Hour with my good friend Alan Tecchio, who was just on a recent podcast announcing that he is back with the Watchtower guys. So anyways, this guy's name is Justin German, and he is known for his work with Autumn Hour and also has a great project out now called Cruel Season. And you can check these guys out on Facebook. We'll have a link up in today's show notes on talkingmetal.com. And speaking of Heavy Montreal, not only will I be hanging out with the great Mitch Joel and Mitch LaFon, but I'm going to be hanging out with my wife, Emily, who is coming up for two of the 3 days. And Emily, who are you most excited to see at Heavy Montreal? There are so many to choose from.
Definitely excited to see Lita Ford. I've never seen Lita Ford, believe it or not. I'm excited for Faith No More. I saw them in 92 with Guns N' Roses, Metallica. And my only memory of that show, aside from Axl not coming on stage until like midnight, was Mike Patton going into the audience during their set and just not coming back out for like 20, 30 minutes. Just totally got lost. And I seem to remember him smashing a chair against the front of the stage as well. So he must have been having kind of an odd off night.
Is there footage of that? Because I seem to remember seeing footage of him smashing a chair. We have to look on YouTube, because I feel like maybe that was something he did at numerous concerts, or maybe there's footage from that actual show. Because I seem to remember seeing footage of that.
Well, it was Indianapolis. I know it was summertime because my sister and I went down. She was my metal partner in crime before I met you. And it was down in Indy. It had to have been 92, summer of 92.
Sounds right. We'll have to look for that footage online. And of course, Marky Ramone is going to be playing. And you and I had the pleasure of jamming once with Marky Ramone. It's funny, you just asked me the other day where that picture was. What were you looking for that for?
Well, your mom has that picture, like, out. So every time we go to her house, I see this picture of us with Marky Ramone, and I don't have that picture. And I was just like kind of going through all my stuff the other day and thought it would be a good one to pull out and have in my archives, and I don't have it. Everyone has it but me, apparently. But well, I also
posted online. I sent you the link.
Oh, you sent it to me?
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. I also am really, I'm also really excited to see Iggy Pop.
Yeah. Yeah, Iggy Pop, definitely. So many great bands. Slipknot, Lamb of God, Iggy Pop, Extreme, Warrant. Like you said, Lita Ford, very excited to see them.
I noticed that both you and Mitch are direct tweeting her about being there. I think you guys are in some kind of competition to see who can get on her tour bus.
Well, I'm actually, there was a big scandal that blew up over the last few days with the Runaways. One of the members, former members of the Runaways, claiming they were raped in front of Joan Jett and one of the other members. So I'm trying to get Lita Ford on because I'd love to ask her what she thinks of this whole thing. Kind of a sad situation, no matter what the real story is.
Well, you've had her on before, right?
It's been at least 3 to 4 years. So it'd be great to have her on to above all else, talk about her upcoming performance at Heavy Montreal. Mastodon is another band that will be performing that I'm very excited to see. So many great bands, and you got to get up to Heavy Montreal, guys. It's coming up shortly. There is a picture in today's show notes on talkingmetal.com that lists all the bands playing, and there are so many great ones.
I'm also excited to see some new blood. I know Arch Enemy has a new lead singer. Haven't seen her yet. I know Angie.
She's from Montreal, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, we've seen them a few times with, was it Angela?
Angie? Yes.
The last singer, but I haven't seen the new one. And I know Asking Alexandria, I think they have a new lead singer as well.
Cool. And Dokken, too, another one of my favorites that will be performing at Heavy Montreal. So definitely totally psyched. Dying Fetus, Gore Guts. Motionless in White is a band I'm really, really digging. The little bit I know about them, kind of like a metal, gothic, contemporary vibe. Very exciting band. Andrew W.K. will be there. Of course, Warrant, Within Temptation, getting a very pretty big name on the bill. So lots of great stuff. Rocket from the Crypt, as Emily mentioned, Asking Alexandria. So lots of great stuff. Jamie Josta will also be up there doing a set. And The Agonist, a band from Montreal, which is the girl from Arch Enemy, the new singer. That's her old band. So should be interesting because I know they didn't part on the best of terms. So that should be interesting. And we'll also have Dig It Up, Wilson, Dead Tired. The list goes on and on. So get yourself to Heavy Montreal. Right now, let's get into my interview with Frank from the classic rock band, the classic hard rock, progressive band, whatever you want to call them, Casablanca Records band. Angel. Love Angel. Love Frank's voice. And the best news of all is that Frank has new music out, and he's going to tell us all about it, and then we're going to hear a little bit of it. But before we do that, we must listen to some classic Angel. This is coming off of the On Earth as It Is in Heaven, and this song is called On the Rocks, followed by my interview with Frank.
The sky was blue, the night was young. We moved.
Hey, this is Mark Striegel of Talking Metal, and on the line we have Frank Dimino checking in with us. Frank, how are you today?
All right, Mark, how are you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm good. A longtime fan going way back to the Angel days, but I want to start off today by talking about a great new album that I just heard that just came out, Old Habits Die Hard, and it's your new album, and you're sounding great on it. There's a lot of cool guest stars, so let's start talking about the record. Let's start with the title, Old Habits Die Hard. What's the meaning behind that?
Well, obviously, you know, I got the old Angel mic stand and the boots, but you know, a lot of people had said, you know, well, what's going on there? I thought you weren't doing it, but I've always been out there. I mean, I've been singing. I've never stopped singing. Whether it's been with, you know, I have a local thing out here called Vinyl Tattoo with Oz and I do. And I went to see Jeff Duncan last night with Armored Saint. They were great. And Jeff Duncan sits in with us on Vinyl Tattoo every once in a while when Oz is not around. But, I've been pretty active. I never stopped doing what I do. So when I started thinking about a title for this album, I thought, well, you know what? I still do what I do. What I've always done. So I thought the title of Old Habits Die Hard would work well. And also the music itself. I think the music on this album is it's a little bit more. I don't want to date it or anything, but it's back from where I come from. So you know, it's a little bit more 70s. But there's a lot of newer sounds to this album. So it's got some of that background classic rock stuff that I grew up with, and I think some of the newer sounding stuff is on there as well.
Yeah, absolutely, I would agree with that. And the guest stars are just great. You mentioned Oz. I'm assuming you're talking about Oz Fox,
right?
And
right,
he is on the record. But what about Eddie Ojeda, a great friend of Talking Metal's of Twisted Sister fame? How and where do you know Eddie from?
Well, I've known Eddie for a while. I know all the guys in Twisted, and Paul Crook, who produced the album, is from New Jersey, and he's great friends with him as well. And what happened was, while we were recording, Eddie had called in, and he was at the NAMM convention and said he was coming to Vegas. Was anything happening? So Paul said, "It's funny you asked." He said, "I'm in the middle of recording Frank's album. Why don't you come down to the studio when you come in?" So he came down to the studio. We played him some tracks, and he loved the stuff. So I asked him, I said, "You want to play on one of the tracks?" He said, "Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to." So we went through the tracks. I pulled it. I thought Tonight's Tonight would be great for him, and he loved the song. So I said, "Well, you know, have a listen to it and come back." And he came back the next day, laid down a great solo, we're all very happy.
Awesome. And another familiar name, Punky Meadows. And,
Punky, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of people kind of lost track of Punky in recent years. And what do you know, what has he been up to? And how did you come back in contact with him? Or maybe you've been in contact with him the whole time.
Yeah,
I don't know.
All of us keep in touch with each other. You know, not that we call each other every day, but we're always in touch with each other. I'm always talking to Barry. Greg lives out here. And I think I probably keep in touch with Punky a lot as well. And Punky and Felix played on the last thing that Barry and I did, the In the Beginning CD that Barry and I did. So when Oz and I wrote Never Again, Oz had said, you know, when I was thinking of this the song, when we started working on this song, I was thinking of an Angel song in the back of my head. He said, "Wouldn't it be great if we had Punky play on it?" I said, "Yeah, I mean, I'll give him a call." So I called him up and I told him what was going on. I said I had a deal and I had a song that I thought might be great for him to play on it if he wanted to play on it. He said, "Absolutely." So I sent him the song we found a studio out there. We sent the tracks to the studio that he found, and he laid down the tracks, sent it back, and it sounded great.
And when you say out there, what is he in L.A.?
He's in North Carolina.
North Carolina, okay.
Yeah,
cool.
He's been in North Carolina for a while. He sold the tanning salons that he had in Virginia, and then moved to North Carolina. So he's been out there for a while.
Cool. Well, yeah, you got some great special guest stars on the record, but who is like the core band that you're now playing with?
The core band that I used was Paul Crook, John Michelli on drums, Danny Miranda on bass, Justin Avery on keyboards, and between Paul Crook, Oz Fox, and Jeff Lubansky, they played most of all the guitar stuff. The other guys that I have, the guest stars, came in and did the solos for me. So
cool, gotcha. And there's a song called Even Now, kind of more of a ballady song. Can you talk about, you know, that song and who helped you write it and kind of the history behind it?
Yeah, that's a song that Barry and I wrote. We just didn't...
Barry, the drummer of Angel.
It, you know, so we still have a couple of songs that we've done that we haven't done anything with, but that was one of them, and I had a version of it that we had done, and I thought that it would fit in great with this with all this stuff. It's the only track that wasn't written for this album, but I thought it fit in great.
So you and Barry had written it for Angel back at some point in the past.
Well, Barry and I kept writing after Angel. That's why we did the In the Beginning CD, was just a compilation of songs that we had kept writing, because he and I just kept writing stuff. So we had nothing to do with them. So we put together the In the Beginning thing because we had songs that we wanted to put out. And that's why we had Punky and Felix played on some, and we have some other friends that played on some tracks. So this has been ongoing. We had a few after that. So this was one of the remnants of some of the songs that we've written together, and it was one of the ones that I thought would fit in great with all the tracks on this particular CD. And it's also a track that my son played on, which is a lot of fun for me to have my son, my youngest son, play on it.
Dylan, his name is, right?
Yeah, Dylan.
And what does Dylan play? What does Dylan play?
Dylan plays the opening, the finger picking. Sorry, I just got over bronchitis. But,
oh man, no worries.
Yeah, I know. he plays the finger picking opening. He plays it through the whole track, and then he plays the last strum, the last chord on the track as well. But he plays through the whole thing, and he was very nervous and stuff at first because he's never done any recording. So, and I had sat down and I said, you got to really go over the track and make sure that you know it. Because when we get down to the studio, I don't want you to hang up anybody. You know, once we start recording, you know, I want you to get through the song. So he worked really hard on it. He didn't really get nervous until we started to head down to the studio. And then when we walked in the studio, we started getting more nervous. But as soon as he sat down, Paul made him feel really, really comfortable. And he just breezed through it. He did a great job.
Good stuff. And again, the album is called Old Habits Die Hard. We'll have links to the album up in today's show notes on talkingmetal.com in the notes for this episode. And Frank, I want to take you back to your past a little bit. Obviously, Angel was signed to this just legendary label in the 70s and went on to be a label in the 80s too, but Casablanca Records. And there's been stuff written about the brainchild, the man behind Casablanca. His name was Neil Bogart. We've read about him in books. We've read all sorts of crazy stories, some great, some not so flattering. What are your memories of Neil Bogart?
Neil's a special guy. He really was. He was like no one else in the record business at that time. He really was a guy that really listened to the artist and worked with the artist. When he signed us we were initially going to sign with Capitol, but Neil was just a guy that. When we brought the first Angel album to Neil, he just made us feel really comfortable, and we felt like we were in good hands when we were around him. You know, he just said the right things, and we felt comfortable that he would take us where we needed to go. And there's very, very few people like that in the record business. I don't know of any to date, but I haven't really dealt with that many. Although, you know, I got a great relationship right now with Frontiers. I think they're one of the few record companies right now that are really keeping the classic rock thing alive, keep it going, and it gives us a venue to put our songs. All of us are writing songs still. You know, we're all still in the business, so I think Frontiers is doing a great job. But getting back to Neil, like I said, Neil was a special guy. He really was.
And how did you guys meet Neil? Was it like an A&R person, or some people say Gene Simmons brought you to the label? How did you meet Neil?
Well, the connection between Kiss and Angel was that when we were in D.C., we played at a club called Bogey's. It's the only place we ever played. We did two shows a night there, and Gordon Fletcher, who used to write for Circus Magazine and Rolling Stone, he used to do a lot of album reviews. He used to come down almost every night. He loved the band, and we used to sit and talk all the time between shows. And one night he said, you know, I'm going to start to bring down some national acts whenever they play at Largo. Largo Arena was like it's kind of like Madison Square Garden in D.C. It was the big arena where the hockey team and the basketball team played. It was like the Forum. So he would bring down bands that were playing in town. And one night he brought down the guys in Kiss, and Gene and Paul and Ace, I believe. I can't remember if Peter was there. I think the whole band was there. But we talked, we hung out, and Gene brought up management for the band, and we had just signed with David Joseph a week before that. So he wanted us to sign with a coin, but we had just signed a management deal. But we talked, you know, we all got along and stuff, and then the next thing was our manager brought us out to L.A. When we went out to L.A., Neil was still kind of – Casablanca hadn't really none of the bands had really broken yet. Kiss was at that point, they were their third album, I think it was Dressed to Kill.
Right.
So they hadn't broken yet. So Neil was still looking for acts to sign to Casablanca, and he was looking for a rock band. And you know, the connection was when David made the call to Neil, I have a band, and the guys in Kiss have seen the band, and so they can tell you about the band and stuff like that. So that was kind of the connection there with Neil, Casablanca, and Kiss. And Neil had called. I assume that he had called Paul or Gene, and then he called us back and said, yeah, you know, I'd love to sign the band. I'd love to hear the band. I'd love to sign the band. So. That, from that point on, that's how our relationship started with Neil.
Cool. You know, it's interesting. I interviewed Tommy Thayer, who's currently playing guitar with Kiss, probably a year and a half, 2 years ago. And he mentioned that he was a fan of Angel to me. Have you kept up with Kiss's career at all? Do you follow any of their newer releases or, you know, occasionally?
Yeah, as best I can, yeah. I mean, I'm always listening to music. And I know Tommy from Portland. When I worked with Jeff way back in the day, Tommy was with a band called Black and Blue.
Right.
So they were from Portland, and so I knew them from back then. And when he became a member of Kiss, I started to listen as well to the newer stuff. And you know, I like all kinds of music. I really do. And Kiss of I think Paul Stanley's a really good songwriter, and Gene as well. So there's always something interesting to listen to and to find if you look hard enough, you know.
Absolutely. When you look back on Angel, you guys, you know, you had the first and the second record came out, and they kind of had a more progressive sound in some ways. And then when the third record came out in 1977, On Earth as It Is in Heaven, to a lot of people it felt a little less progressive. Do you agree with that? And if so, was there a conscious decision to kind of say, hey, we need to become something more than a progressive hard rock band?
Yeah, I think at this point it's probably pretty well documented that, you know, from the first two albums, and we wrote a little bit differently as well. I think the first two albums, Punky, Greg, and myself wrote a lot of the stuff, after rehearsal we would stay together and maybe at rehearsal we're working on, like, riffs and stuff. So we would put together a lot of stuff and then the next day, you know, at rehearsal have the kind of the arrangement of the stuff together, and then I would lay some lyrics on it and put a melody to it. So we wrote a little bit differently for the first two albums, but we knew exactly what we would do on the first two albums. By the time we got to the third album, obviously the record company, there was a little bit more pressure to get more airplay, but also you have to remember too that those first two albums that we did, the radio airplay was much different. There was a lot of AOR stuff. They played Long Time, I remember, on the radio a lot from the first album. And you'd never hear that, something like that, played now from a new band. You know, it was very very different. It's a progressive slow ballad, you know. And so the radio station's airplay was changing as well. So we tried to, you know, without giving up too much, you know, under the pressure of the record company and getting ready radio airplay, we tried to, the transition began on the third album. But I think by the time we got to the fourth album, it was a transition, but I think we were also writing differently as well. We were breaking off into pairs. Barry and I started writing more, Punky and I, Greg and I. It was just different. You know, we started to write more as songwriters, I think. And we also started to work within the studio a lot more. So,
cool. Just a couple more questions, and we'll wrap it up. In the 80s, one of the biggest selling records of the 1980s, over 20 million copies sold, the Flashdance soundtrack, and you're on that record, singing a song, "Seduce Me Tonight." How did you get involved with that?
When we did the Foxes movie, we worked with Giorgio, and from that relationship with Giorgio, I started doing a lot of studio things for him. I did a lot of he would call me and ask me to do some backgrounds to a lot of the stuff he was producing, I did backgrounds for Sparks album and some other things that he produced. So I did a lot of that stuff with him, and he had called me because he was in the midst of doing the Metropolis thing with Keith Forsey.
Okay.
He was doing the soundtrack for that, so he asked me if I would come and work with him and Keith on doing some songs for the soundtrack of Metropolis. I said, of course. So I went to his house up in Truesdale, where he had a studio there, and we started working on new stuff for the Metropolis thing. And while that was going on, he was doing this movie called Flashdance. At the time, Staying Alive, I think, was coming out at the same time, and that was looking at like that was going to be the big hit of the year because it had Stallone and John Travolta. And this little movie, Flashdance, it had all these little vignettes going on, and everyone thought, "Yeah, okay, it's a nice movie, but it'll be okay, but it's not going to be Staying Alive." So what happened was they wanted to use the song. I believe it was Brown Sugar in that section where they eventually used the song that I did, I assume.
So when you said they used it like in a rough cut of the film or something, they used it.
That's what they were thinking. Yeah, when they were looking at the film, you know, and putting the soundtrack together, they were thinking, well, let's use the Brown Sugar would go great there, and it would be great to have the Stones on this movie. But I assume that they didn't really want to pay the cost of the Stones, what the Rolling Stones wanted for Brown Sugar and that. So they asked Giorgio if he had any songs, and And we had a song that we had been working on, and Giorgio said, I'm thinking of using this song in that movie, that Flash, because we were looking at the rushes of Flashdance while we were doing Metropolis every day at his house, when we were finished. And he said, what do you think about that song? And I said, well, yeah, if you want to do it, I think it'll be fine. So it was at the end of the day. Keith and I were in the other room and having a drink, and, we had just finished our recording on the Metropolis stuff. And Giorgio came in the room and said, okay, let's do that song. And both of us looked at each other and said, what do you mean? No, let's record the song. I said, well, we're done for the day. So we went back in there, and we did it real quick, laid it down really quick, and then the next day he put some sax on it and stuff like that, and we forgot about it. And it went out there, and then all of a sudden Flashdance became the bigger hit than Staying Alive, and it became a huge selling soundtrack. So it was one of those odd things that happen, while you're standing there, it's happening in front of you,
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know if you heard, but Daft Punk, that band, they had a real big record like 1 or 2 years ago. They have a whole tribute to Giorgio on their record, and you actually hear him talking about his history and stuff during the song. It's kind of cool if you haven't heard
I haven't heard that, yeah.
Yeah, it's good stuff, good stuff. Cool.
I gotta find that.
Well, Frank, thanks so much for sharing some great old stories with us and for filling us in on the new record, Old Habits Die Hard. Again, we will feature some of the music here on today's podcast and hype it as much as we can, because it is a good one.
Thank you so much for having me, Mark. It's really a pleasure.
That was a little new music by Frank. You just heard my interview with him. Again, his record is called Old Habits Die Hard, and that song right there opens the record. It's called Never Again. Good stuff, Frank. We're so glad you are rocking us for, wow, going on like 40 years since that first Angel. It's been 40 years. I think that first Angel record came out in 1975. So congratulations to you for having such a great, long career, Frank Dominio. Again, coming up next, we have an interview with Justin German, a local guy here in the New York tri-state area. He's done some work with Alan Tecchio of Hades, Watchtower, and Nonfiction fame. We're going to hear some music that he did with Alan back probably 5-6 years ago with the band Autumn Hour. And then we will get into my interview with guitarist Justin German. He's got some new music out, coming out soon. I don't think it's out quite yet, but it's going to be coming out real soon. And he's going to tell us about that. Cruel Seasons is the band he's working with now. And we will have links up to their Facebook page in today's show notes. But again, this is right now a little Autumn Hour featuring Alan Tecchio on vocals, Justin German on guitar, followed by my interview with Justin. All right, let's do it. Hey, this is Mark Striegel of Talking Metal, and checking in on the line, we have Justin German of the band Cruel Season. Justin, nice to meet you, man.
Nice to meet you too, Mark. I've been a big fan for a long time, and it's great to finally talk to you.
Cool. Well, I'm glad you reached out and introduced yourself via email. And, you know, the music that Cruel Season is doing that I've heard, which I haven't heard a lot, but I've heard you sent me one track and really digging it. And we're going to talk about that track. We're going to talk about the upcoming record. But could you briefly, you know, in 2 or 3 minutes, kind of give us a little history lesson on Cruel Season?
Well, Cruel Season really began in 2009, and that's when Michael McManaman, the vocalist of the band, Roger Cohen, the drummer, and myself, you know, the guitar player, met Doug O'Dell. And you should know that Roger and Michael and myself played in a group together many years ago, and we played together for many years. And that band sort of fell silent. And, you know, we did the best we could. We warmed up for some nationals. And we actually went by the name of Fuel back in the day.
Not to be confused with Brett Scallion's Fuel, right?
Exactly. More power to them. And it was almost proof of concept that after we had disbanded that they had so much success. And, of course, you know, I think that they're also an East Coast group. And we were very happy to hear all of that. But we always had interest in our music. And Michael McManaman, the vocalist of Cruel Season, met Doug O'Dell in 2003. And Mike reached back through to Roger and myself and said, wow, you know, this is a great bass player, and we really need to play with him. So we started sort of reviving this lost canon of work, and it really gelled. You know, Doug's sound was perfect for the group, and Doug wound up being a really key member of the band and bringing some fresh blood into this music as a writer and just a major contributor. So we started a project to record this music that is going to be our debut full-length called Rise on Dark Star, which is associated with Sony Music. It's an indie in association with Sony Entertainment. But long story short, we started to record the music ourselves. Of course, we went to a studio to record the drums because, you know, that's an art form in itself. So we went to J-Rod Studios. We tracked the basics for drums. And I fell on the Cruel Season corporate sword and began the long process of engineering, you know, all of the other tracks.
Now, J-Rod Studios, I know that name for some reason. Where is that?
Well, you definitely will. He's in Rockland County. We're both friends with Alan Tecchio, both right. You and I, and also John Corsiari, who owns J-Rod Studios.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it was through those friendships. Not only that, but Johnny Corsiari also engineered the Autumn Hour record that Alan Tecchio and I did together.
Great record. Yeah, great record.
Wow, thank you very much. It's a favorite of mine, too, and I just, you know, I'm such a fan of Alan's and I have so much respect for him. So it was a natural progression to go to John's studio to record basic drums. So, you know, we took those tracks and began the long, tedious process from 2009 all the way to 2013, you know, making our record. And we did it in various sort of makeshift studios. And it was a real engineering feat, especially for myself, and I hadn't had experience doing that kind of a work. But, you know, I think it sounds pretty great. We wound up having great support from Tim Gillis, who is an owner of Big Blue Meanie Studios. And he was, you know,
Jersey
only,
City. My friend used to work at Big Blue Meanie. Do you know Arun Venkatesh? Do you know him?
Yeah, I know Arun, sure. I know his brother, too.
Yeah, Krishna. Yeah, yeah. Those guys are like old friends of mine. Arun and I had a band for years, a really good New York City kind of like sleaze metal punk band that we used to play in together that just had so much fun with Arun. But, wow, small world.
It always is, and it never ceases to amaze me. So, you know, Tim, probably before he even knew Arun, was helping out Roger and Michael and myself, you know, back in the day when we were first working. So after we had done all of our work, you know, our due diligence recording the drums with John, recording all of the tracks, I went back through to Tim and asked, you know, if he would help us out with a mix and also mastering. And of course, you know, on our budget, we really couldn't afford what the work that, you know, he did. And it sounds just great. And he's always been a supporter and so grateful to him for mixing and mastering it. So it was nice to bring the story sort of full circle to finish it up with Tim, and I'm pretty happy with the results. I think they speak for themselves.
Cool. And I want to talk to you about one of the songs that you sent me in a few minutes, but Cruel Season songs, that is. But first, let's back up to Alan Tecchio and your relationship with him. You did the Autumn Hour CD with him a number of years back, which was a great one. I guess my first question is, where did you first meet Alan?
I'm sorry, you broke up there, but I think you asked, where did I meet Alan?
Yeah, where did you first meet Alan? Yes.
Well, it was through association with the band that I was in at the time, Fuel. Actually, now thinking about it, I think Alan had recorded some Hades tracks with Tim at Big Blue in their first studio.
Ah, okay.
And we were also in there at the same time. And, you know, I got to just be honest. I was a huge friend or a fan of Dan Lorenzo and later became a friend of his.
Yeah.
But his work in nonfiction, I really felt like, you know, and really Alan's vocal style, I thought that whole band was great. Kevin Bolenbach on bass, too.
Absolutely.
Was just tremendous. So we sort of built a friendship through that mutual connection at the studio, and we actually were fortunate enough to sort of open up for Nonfiction on some East Coast shows, which was of course a great thing for, you know, a band like us. And
yeah.
Alan and I kept in touch, and we always wanted to sort of work together. And it took many years. I mean, you know, as you know, Alan is involved in so many really great metal projects, and to just be in the pantheon of all of that with the Autumn Hour project really is an honor.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was a great CD. And I'd love to hear, you know, I'm very excited for Cruel Season, don't get me wrong, but I'd love to hear some more Autumn Hour at some point. And I thought Alan told me at one time that that you guys were potentially working on new stuff. Am I imagining that?
You're not imagining it, and it's actually a little bit different than the debut Autumn Hour full length. We pretty much have the music written for, 10 principal tracks for the follow-up, and we sort of just got caught up in a lot of life, you know, and including, you know, music. You know, Alan has been involved with, some pretty big projects. At the time, I think he was, you know, just starting to do some Watchtower, and then the really great Mike LePond project came up, Silent Assassin.
Oh yeah.
And you know, of course, there's interest again in the Watchtower music, which is phenomenal, and I'm just so happy for myself as a fan and for the metal community, you know, at large, because what I've heard is incredible. Really,
yeah.
It's going to blow people's minds.
Cool.
But,
yeah.
You know, hopefully we'll be able to circle back to that. There's also a different acoustic project that Alan and I have been working on for years, too. So, you know, there's always something going on, and it's just a matter of coordinating schedules and timing and all of that.
Absolutely. Cool. So let's circle back to Cruel Season. Don't worry, I'll edit that. Let's circle back to Cruel Season. And the album is due out, Rise, it's called. It's due out in October. I heard one of the songs off the record, and there's kind of an interesting, unique story behind this song, or I guess special guest. I don't know what the story is, but I want to ask you about the song Sordid, right?
Yeah. Well, Sordid's a special song on the record. We actually closed the CD out with it.
It's a great tune,
really,
man. The guitar sounds great. I mean, it's got such a great guitar tone, which always just pulls me right in. But fun song, great song.
Well, thank you so much. And I mean, I know you're a gear hound, too. I use a lot of interesting amps and some very cool guitars. So it was really just a pleasure to record it. I'm so happy to hear you liked it. And I guess the interesting element of the song is that, you know, we had a guest vocalist on it, Sally Struthers.
The Sally Struthers. We're talking from All in the Family, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I know that, that must sound, you know, just completely strange to, you know, fans of metal music.
Well, in some ways, yes. But if you think about All in the Family, okay, you had Rob Reiner, who gave us the great movie Spinal Tap. You know, that was all his brainchild. He went on tour with Saxon to research it. You know, so in a weird sort of way, All in the Family now has more than one metal connection, because you have Sally on your record and on this song. So again, how in the world did you end up getting her on this song?
Well, first off, you just blew my mind with that comparison, because it's amazing. I never thought about it, and I think that's great.
Yeah.
So Roger Cohen, the drummer of Cruel Season, he and his wife are friends of hers. You know, she has got a history in Broadway performances and musicals, and you know, Roger, who's, you know, a phenomenal, you know, metal rock drummer, percussionist, you know, he also works as a jazz musician, he and his wife, professionally.
Okay.
So they had developed a friendship with Sally, and, you know, in just passing, Roger had mentioned this, and he said, you know, she's such a nice person, and, you know, so willing to just, you know, go out there and try to be creative. I just had this crazy idea of, hey, you know, why don't we ask her to come on down and sort of sing some vocals? And originally the song I had asked for her to come down to record is a song that's called Smooth Like Ken, which will actually be on our follow-up CD.
Okay.
What she could do. So she had absolutely no prep time to really work out her parts or work out what she was going to do. And she was more than happy to just jump in, give it a try, and recording her vocals and being in the room with her, she was really going for it. And,
wow, nice.
You know,
how old is she now? How old is she now?
I don't know her age, but she was, you know, very, very active, very vital, and very into it, and it was actually quite inspiring, because, you know, she truly went for it.
Awesome. And it's a fun listen. The song's great, and she comes in towards the end of the song, right?
Well, she comes in more prominently towards the end.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, in the verses, there's this sort of repeating pattern of the word Sordid, which is also the name of the tune, and she's in there with Mike. They're both singing it at the same time.
Oh, nice. Okay, cool.
Yeah, really sort of in unison. It's not a harmony part.
Well, I mean, I give her a lot of credit for just being willing to do that, you know, and that's awesome. So, Justin, before I let you go, just a couple real generic questions for you. I know you're a guitar player. What initially attracted you to guitar, and what were some of your early guitar influences, or who were some of your early guitar influences?
Well, that's a great question. I'm so glad you asked that. And, like you, I mean, I really grew up in a golden age of guitar playing, because, you know, if you remember MTV in the early days, there was Van Halen Unchained.
Yeah.
So it was music like that. It was early Ozzy music with Randy Rhoads.
Such great stuff.
You know, then, of course, you know, some incredible music. You know, I just love the David Lee Roth album, Eat 'Em and Smile, with Steve Vai.
One of my favorites.
Isn't that just tremendous? I mean, and there's energy in that record, because can you imagine the pressure Steve Vai must have felt, you know, with a record coming out with David Lee Roth, who just left Van Halen?
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, it was such, to me, it was more Van Halen than what Van Halen ended up doing, you know, with Sammy. And I'm a big Sammy fan, but, you know, I don't know, that first album they did with Sammy was never one of my favorites, and I thought the Roth record, Eat 'Em and Smile, just killed it.
Well, I loved it, and I really felt like they had something to prove, and they did. Ladies Night in Buffalo.
Yeah. Opens with a really D minor 7 chord. That's a D minor 7 chord. I just love it, at the 10th fret there. So, yeah, great stuff.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, Justin, it's been fun talking with you, and definitely keep us posted on Cruel Season. We're going to link the Facebook page in today's show notes on Talking Metal. I encourage everybody to go over and give it a like and check out Justin and his band, Cruel Season. Right now, we're going to get into the song Sordid, which we were talking about earlier. You said this closes the record, right?
Indeed, it does, yes.
Closes the record, and this is special guest co-vocalist on this song is Sally Suthers.
What you just heard was the band Cruel Season featuring Sally Struthers, who once shared the screen with Rob Reiner of Spinal Tap fame, guy behind the Spinal Tap movie, and he was also the guy who was in it. He was played the part of the documentary filmmaker in the movie. So Sally Struthers, of course, known from All in the Family and from those commercials telling you to save starving children or whatever it was. Or were they starving dogs? I can't remember. I think they were starving children, actually. Was it UNICEF? I don't know. So here we go. Let's wrap it up with some music by Korn and get ready for their appearance at Heavy Montreal. It's going to be a good one, guys. Slipknot, Faith No More, Korn, Alexis on Fire, Lamb of God, Iggy Pop, NOFX, Billy Talent, Mastodon, Bullet for My Valentine. The list goes on and on. But right now, this is Korn on Talking Metal. A little classic Korn. Freak on a Leash.
Something takes a part of me. Something lost and never seen. Every time I start to believe, something's raped and taken from me, from me.